Welcome back to the GCN Racing News Show. Coming up this week, Jonas Vingegaard's shock exit at the Tour de France, Remco Evenepoel's huge statement that has silenced his critics, the fastest and fourth fastest Tour de France stages in history, and why I don't think the controversial overnight anti-doping controls are entirely a bad thing. This week in the world of racing, we learned that Wout van Aert is busy training for La Vuelta. Either that, or he's just a bit bored whilst the Tour de France is on. Nice to see him having some fun, either way. We also learnt that the record for the fastest Tour de France stage in history has been broken. On stage 11 into Nevers, Soren Varenshaw covered the 161 kilometres in just 3 hours and 10 minutes. That's an average speed of 50.9 kilometres per hour, or 31.6 miles per hour. And remarkably, just 2 days later, we had the fourth fastest stage in history, despite it being the longest stage of the race this year, and with 2,300 metres of elevation gain. Now, that one was won by Jacob Alula's Mauro Schmidt. And finally, we learned that Jonas Vingegaard is no longer a part of this year's Tour de France. And that is quite a strange feeling, because he's been a constant feature of the race since 2021. That was his debut year, and although he finished a distant second to Pogačar on GC, he did have him on the ropes up Mont Ventoux that year. Didn't make any difference to the outcome of the race, but it was an early glimpse of the intense rivalry that developed in the preceding years. Now, Visma Lisebike had taken complete control of yesterday's stage at the Plateau de Solaison. It was Vingegaard's best opportunity to shine in the race up to that point, a really tough and steep mountaintop finish. The chances of him dropping Pogačar were very slim, but the chances of him putting significant time into his other rivals were quite high. But we will never know what would have happened because he slipped out on a tricky corner and subsequently broke his collarbone. And it's the first time the Dane has ever pulled out of a Grand Tour. His first was La Vuelta back in 2020, where he helped Primoz Roglic to victory. Since then, he's finished 8 Grand Tours with 4 wins and 4 second places. So this must really hurt both physically and mentally, but he was characteristically laid back about the whole thing, refusing to blame anyone or anything for that accident, not even the 2 a.m. wake-up call he'd had from anti-doping officials the night before. The race will not be the same without him. He almost certainly wasn't going to win it, but he is the one rider in the race who has got the better of Pogačar at the Tour de France in the past. He's the rider who made Tadej Pogačar the rider he is today. I think without Jonas, there's no doubt in my mind that Pogačar would not be as good as he is right now. He spurred him on to be the best that he could be. Anyway, here's what Tadej Pogačar had to say about the incident and Jonas' exit after the stage.
Yeah, it's really, really, really sad to see that Jonas is out. Since 21, we were always battling out for the victory. Maybe at the beginning we didn't have the best relationship, but in the last 2 years, we became good rivals, good like respected rivals, competitors, but I also think kind of friends. And it's really the tour will not be the same without him. And yeah, it got me thinking just before in an interview for France TV. Today we had a doping control. He had it at 2 in the morning and got me thinking maybe this is also a reason that, one night that your sleep is ruined, maybe a little bit less concentrated in the descent, and his tour is ruined. Maybe this... I don't blame that, but could be also a little bit connected. So yeah, it's just really sad to see him leave.
Now, in that interview, you heard Pogačar talking about the overnight anti-doping control that they had the night before the stage. Was it the cause of Vingegaard's crash? We don't know, nor does he. But a severely disrupted sleep 2 weeks into the toughest race on the planet and between 2 very hard mountain stages is clearly not going to help your concentration. Given that, you might be wondering how on earth I think these doping controls are not entirely a bad thing. So I shall explain myself. Now, cycling has a horrible history when it comes to doping. Almost every single one of you watching this will be aware of that. It was dragged through the mud, and quite rightly so. Was it dirtier than all other pro sports? I doubt it, personally, but it's certainly seen by most as having been the dirtiest simply because of the amount of media attention it got. And that was a good thing because it forced the sport to take a long, hard look at itself. Major sponsors pulled out or threatened to do so if there were any positive tests within their team. And since bike teams rely almost entirely on that sponsorship for their budget, things had to change. At least that's my opinion based on what I saw at the time, but I know that many of you hold a very different opinion, which I completely understand and completely respect. Anyway, back to the point. Pro cycling is still in a place where riders are often seen as guilty until they prove their innocence. But how do you prove your innocence? Ultimately, it is nigh on impossible, because whilst on the one hand you can rightly claim that it's the sport with the most anti-doping tests, on the other hand, we know that Lance Armstrong and many other riders of his time managed to pass those tests even when they were doping. And so, it leaves current pro cyclists in quite a difficult situation. They can't roll out the same lines as Lance used to, but they also don't really have any other lines of defence, do they? Overnight testing actually became a possibility for the anti-doping authorities after a rule change that came back in 2016. One which some riders and teams were unaware of until yesterday, it seems. Now, under normal circumstances, standard anti-doping controls are prohibited between the hours of 11 p.m. and 6 a.m, but there is an exception clause. So under Article 5.2 of the UCI anti-doping rules, it states that neither the ICA, which is the International Testing Agency, nor the UCI will conduct tests during the night unless A, a rider has specifically nominated that midnight window as their mandatory 60-minute daily whereabouts slot, or B, if the testing authority holds, and I quote, serious and specific suspicion that the rider may be engaged in doping. Now, there was some speculation that it might have been the AFLD who carried out the testing overnight. They being the Agence Française de Lutte Contre le Dopage, or French Anti-Doping Agency. However, the ITA have since confirmed that it was them, but they would have to comply with the AFLD code, which states that such testing requires serious indications that doping is actively taking place. Now that, of course, implies there's a genuine suspicion from authorities that Pogačar and Vingegaard are doping. But it's important to note that Pogačar and Vingegaard will both have been tested a lot already during the Tour de France. Pogačar in particular, because he will have been tested every single time he's been in yellow and or won a stage, plus other random tests at other times. So why is there need for more in the middle of the night? Well, there is speculation that microdosing performance-enhancing drugs can allow you to get the benefit of those drugs whilst also avoiding a positive test. Basically, little and often, such that the doping product only remains detectable in your system for a few hours rather than for a few days. If you were going to do that, it would make sense to do so last thing in the evening, giving plenty of time ahead of a possible visit from anti-doping authorities the next morning. And that specifically, really, is why I'm not completely against overnight anti-doping tests. If pro cycling really wants to be seen to be as clean as it claims it is now, these are the sorts of measures that it has to accept. However, I do not agree with the way in which they did it. In fact, the way they did it means that they may also have had an artificial effect on the rider's performance, the very thing they're trying to prevent in the first place. If you're going to do this, it has to be done in a way that is at least mostly fair. And by that, I mean blanket testing across all the GC favourites, the top 10, for example, at the same time in the night and on the same night. At least that way, everybody's sleep and recovery is going to be equally disrupted. To have two riders at a disadvantage to the rest that they are competing against is unfair. Unless the authorities really do have solid grounds for suspecting that one or both of them is doping and the rest aren't. Now, just before I finish with this, I will also say I think this could serve as a good deterrent to the riders. I mean, whilst I personally believe that the majority of current pro riders are clean, much to the disgust of some of the Twitterati last week, I'm obviously not so naive as to think that nobody is trying to cheat right now. There's a lot of money involved in the sport, and when that's the case, there is always going to be someone trying to cheat the system. However, if that's you trying to cheat the system, and you hear these overnight doping controls, it's going to be a wake-up call, if you pardon the pun. Anyway, let me know your thoughts on this subject, as I'm sure that many of you hold a very different opinion to my own. You can leave them in the comment section down below, and I look forward to reading them. Right, back to the racing and the actual Tour de France. There are a few fleeting moments after Jonas Vingegaard's crash where nobody really knew what to do. But once it was confirmed he was out of the race, teams resumed their plans. Bahrain Victoria set to work, as did Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe. But then came the turn of UAE team Emirates. But not in classic fashion. Tadej Pogačar himself took over the pace setting, and it quickly became obvious he was working for teammate Isaac Del Toro, who'd also crashed. They dropped everyone on the climb to the finish except for Remco Evenepoel. And not only did they not drop Remco, he looked $1 million. There was no sign of him being in any sort of difficulty. Quite the contrary, in fact. He looked in complete control, easily riding around Del Toro when he started to struggle behind Pogacar's pace. And so we had this strange situation whereby Pogacar could probably have ridden away from everyone and onto a 26th Tour de France stage victory, but instead he passed up on that opportunity and time gained on GC to help his teammate get back onto the GC podium and back into the white jersey. And they succeeded in doing that, but in doing so, they also missed out on a stage win. Not the end of the world, they've got enough already, but it's a little strange to watch, I thought. Now, did Pogacar gift that stage to Evenepoel? That's been a big question. I would say yes, he did. Remco is no slouch these days and has sprinted to the line, but the fact that Pogacar was in the saddle for the last 100 metres tells me that if he'd really wanted to win that sprint, he probably could have done. I mean, perhaps he thought Remco deserved it. Perhaps he didn't feel right in celebrating it on the day that his biggest rival had crashed out of the race. I don't know 100%, but to me, it did look like a gift, just like the one he gave Isaac Del Toro on the stage two of the race. But I also, to make it clear, do not want to take anything away from Remco Evenepoel. That was his best ever performance at the Tour de France on a climb that tough. I didn't think he was capable of doing that based on what I've seen over the last couple of years, or even the last couple of weeks, to be fair. But he proved me and many other critics wrong, which clearly meant a lot to him. This is what he had to say after the stage win.
Oh, it's amazing. I'm literally trembling from emotions. It's it's been a hell of a day. Like a pretty hard start. I was actually feeling really bad in the beginning, but I really got better and better during the day. So just you have to understand like how I'm racing with the best guy ever, best rider ever, and he has been doing a hell of a climb to try to win the stage with Isaac. And for me, it's a big step forward that I can follow this pace, because it was like a crazy hard pace. And also, you have to understand, like, I always get so many critics about he cannot survive steep climbs and this and that. And it feels amazing. And just towards myself, everybody around me, it's.
You have got to love a Remco Evenepoel interview. Whether he's been successful or not, he always gives great quotes, and the sport is far better off for it. And according to the Belgian journalist Jonas Kreteur, that was the first time that a Belgian has won a mountaintop finish stage at the Tour de France as a GC rider from the GC group since Lucien Van Impe in 1981. Now, I would say that a confident Remco Evenepoel is a very dangerous Remco Evenepoel. And it's quite likely that his confidence is only going to increase further tomorrow, because it's the only individual time trial of the race this year. There aren't many time trials that don't suit Remco Evenepoel, but this one in particular is perfect for him. Essentially 9 kilometres uphill, 9 downhill and 9 flat. I mean, it would be a surprise if he didn't win it, and it's virtually a guarantee that he'll significantly increase the gap on those behind him in the general classification. By the way, keep your eye out for the TotalEnergies riders in tomorrow's individual time trial, because they're going to be using some very special HJC TT helmets. I got a quick sneak peek the other day and they look incredibly cool. Anyway, this is how things look with 6 stages of the race remaining this year. Pogacar holds an advantage of exactly 5 minutes over Remco Evenepoel in second, whilst Del Toro moved up 4 places yesterday from 7th to 3rd. Six Ass lost his white jersey to the Mexican, but remains in 4th due to Vingegaard's exit, whilst Florian Lipovic has moved up to 5th. The biggest loser yesterday, though, was Lidl Trek's Juan Ayuso, who lost 2 minutes on the stage. He's now down to 6th, whilst teammate Schelmoser is in 7th. Lenny Martinez is up to 8th, while Pidcock is 9th, despite 20 seconds of penalties for Pidcock for pushing off cars on yesterday's stage. But from Pidcock in 9th to Jagat in 10th, there's a gap of over 8 minutes. Now, the Frenchman is over 19 minutes down on Pogacar. The last time the gap between 1st and 10th at the Tour de France at this point was bigger than that was back in 1997, where Jan Ulrich was almost half an hour in front of Laurent Dufaux. In the other classifications, Mats Pedersen still leads the points. He's 31 in front of Philipsen and 55 in front of Gumai, whilst everyone behind them has moved up a place because Tim Melier abandoned the race during yesterday's stage after his 3-stage wins. Pogacar leads Paris-Pant by 22 points in the mountains classification. Del Toro leads Youth, as we mentioned before, and Lidl Trek still lead the teams, although their half-hour advantage has been cut to just 3 minutes by UAE team Emirates. Okay, just to wrap up the other stages from last week, I did briefly mention Mara Schmidt's win, but I wanted to say a huge congratulations both to him and his team Jayco Alula. Tour de France stage wins have always been prestigious, obviously, but I'd say never more so than now, at a time when the biggest teams and riders are sweeping up more than ever before. So the same goes for Varenshold and Uno X. After 15 stages, 7 teams now have a stage win in the bank, but that means that 15 do not. So there's going to be a fair bit of desperation, I would say, going into the final 6 stages this year. Okay, just before I move on to other races, just wanted to let you know, there is still time to get your hands on our Grand Tour merchandise this year. We've made a huge effort this year with all the designs, from the prints to the t-shirts like this one and far beyond. And it's been amazing to see that reflected in the number of you who have made purchases. So thank you to all of you who've done that already. It is very much appreciated. But if you haven't and you would like to do so, all you need to do is head over to shop.globalcyclingnetwork.com or scan the QR code that should be on your screen right now. Okay, on to some other races now. Again, not a huge amount going on during the Tour de France, but we did have a few. First up, Zoë Bakstedt won the Baloise Ladies Tour for the second time in her career last week. She won both the prologue and the individual time trial over the 4 days. The other 4 stages all finished in sprints, and it was a bit of a coming of age for 22-year-old Nienke Veenhoven of Visma Lisa Bike. She started the race with 3 career pro wins, but she doubled that over the 5 days to 6. She beat Charlotte Cole twice and Gladys Verhulst-Wild once. Cole herself did get the better of Veenhoven on stage 2 into Zolder though. However, despite racking up 32 bonus seconds over the race, Veenhoven still finished 22 seconds behind Bakstedt on the GC, whilst 21-year-old Felicity Wilson-Haffenden slipped down to 3rd on the final day. Meanwhile, the 4-day Giro Ciclista della Val d'Aosta Mont Blanc, a proven testing ground for U23s, the Brazilian Henrique Bravo took one of the biggest wins of his career so far. He finished 26 seconds in front of UAE's Mateo Ramirez on GC. Bravo had set up his overall win on the opening stage, which was a mountain time trial, where he won in front of Max Bock, who himself went on to finish 3rd on the GC. That's actually Bravo's 3rd GC win so far this season. Almost undoubtedly, he'll step up to the pro ranks next year, and I would presume that will be with Soudal Quickstep. He's with their development team at the moment, but I'm not 100% sure on that. He's definitely going to have offers from other teams if he does want to move elsewhere. In other news, Mats Pedersen told reporters last week that he plans to retire after his home world championships in Denmark. They will take place in 2029, at which point he'll be 3 months shy of his 34th birthday. Although by that point, he will have been pro for 13 years. So I think he'll deserve to take it easy if he wants to. Right then, that is all for this week's GCN Racing News Show. I will see you all next Monday to wrap up the final week of the Tour de France and the race as a whole. So I look forward to seeing you all then. Goodbye for now.